and it just ragdoll threw me down the hill. I remember up to the point where I was flying through the air backwards Superman, and then it was just lights out.
Welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast, presented by Exo Mountain Gear. This podcast and the gear that we produce at Exo Mountain Gear share the same purpose: to make you a more capable, confident, and successful backcountry hunter. This show is all about providing you with valuable information from experienced hunters. To learn more about the podcast or about our backcountry hunting packs, visit exomountaingear.com. Thanks for tuning in to the Hunt Backcountry podcast. This is episode 164. Before we get into the show, I want to give a shout out to Matt Ragsdale. And Matt, thank you for leaving us the review in iTunes. Send us your shipping address to podcasts@exomountaingear.com, and we want to send some swag your way. Listeners, we'd love to hear your feedback, whether that's a review or you contact us directly by email to podcasts@exomountaingear.com with your questions, comments, feedback, or suggestions for future episodes. Don't forget as well, another giveaway opportunity, more free stuff. This month, you can win a tight spot quiver and a ripcord arrow rest. All you need to do to enter is go to exomountaingear.com/podcast, look for the giveaway link. It'll take you like 30 seconds. Go get entered today. We will be sure to continue these giveaways all through 2019. And yeah, thank you guys for participating in that. So this episode is with Martin Fox, and he is a guy that we met at the Hunt Expo. He came up to Steve and I, had a really interesting story to share about an accident that he had in the backcountry, and he actually had to push SOS on his Garmin inReach, and help was sent via helicopter, and we hear all about that. So if you've ever thought about what happens when you push SOS, like what are the consequences of that? What are the next steps? What do you do? How does help come? Who gets notified? All that, we discuss that in this episode. One interesting bit is that Martin actually had that inReach device because of a previous episode he heard on this podcast with another listener who had a similar situation. So if you guys don't yet have a means to communicate or call for help if you're in the backcountry, make sure you tune into this. Make sure you consider that what-if scenario. It's easy to think it'll never happen to me, and I hope that it never does, but at the same time, things can go bad quick. And if you're in the backcountry and you're in mobile and you're injured, you need something like this. So tune in. Hope you guys learn from this experience. And I hope you never need this information. But just in case, here it is. Let's get into this conversation with Martin.
Yeah, so a little bit about me. Born and raised here in Utah. Grew up hunting a little bit, just kind of, the traditional Utah rifle hunter with my family. My dad was into it quite a bit. And then when I got to be about 12, 13, everything shifted from the hunting stuff to more sports. So played sports in high school, played football. It's kind of my favorite. Played baseball for a couple years. And then being from Utah, and the LDS, went on an LDS mission and then came home. And that was kind of a turning point for me. At first, I wasn't too excited about the hunting stuff, but then, I don't know, something switched in me, man. And it snowballed from there. I got extremely addicted pretty fast. So I spend a lot of times out in the hills in the spring, shed hunting, in the fall hunting. Last fall, I think I spent 35, almost 40 days hunting. I had an elk tag in New Mexico, hunted Utah, do the dedicated hunter thing in Utah. So I spend quite a bit of time outdoors. So, try to hunt as much as I can. Luckily I have a good job that allowed me to make my own schedule and spend time out when I can, when my wife is okay with it.
Yeah, that's cool. So this hunt that we're going to talk about and the incident, that was just this past fall in 2018?
2018, yep. Actually spring. It was a spring shed hunting trip that... Yeah, so me and my brother-in-law, and then a friend of mine, his name's Chance. We were planning on... We did a trip similar to it the year before, where we just took the horses and we're, you know, ride way up into the backcountry. And
was that, sorry not to cut you off, was that in the same country the year before, 2017, as you were going into in 2018, or was this new country you were headed into?
So what's funny is going into the 2018 trip, we were on our way down to a completely different, to the area we went the year before, and Chance's dad and uncle were already down there. So they called us on our drive down. We were probably 45 minutes out of town, and they said, hey, we just woke up to 6 inches of snow. You probably don't want to come down here. And so we're like, well, and you know how the weather can be, you know, it snows one place and then, you know, you drive 50 miles and it's still sunny. You know what I mean? So We're like, well, let's just find a new place. So we actually just pulled over off the freeway and went in and got some food and sat there, and we're like, well, let's go here. It hardly ever snows out here. So we backtracked, went back to town, and then shot clear across the other part of the state, clear away. So we had we were just looking at Onyx and Google Earth on our drive there, like, okay, this country looks good. I kind of had an idea of some country that I've had on my mind to go hike and to hit, but it was a place that I had never been. I had never been on the range, never been on that unit. So we were kind of going at it blind, but you know, with Google Earth and Onyx these days, you can get an idea of where to go and whatnot. So that was the trip. So yeah, it was, and you know, what's funny about that is I let my wife know we were going to another area, and called her right before we lost cell phone service and kind of told her the canyon we were in, but that was it. And I don't remember Chance or my brother-in-law Matt calling there. I mean, I know he let his dad and uncle know we were going, but I don't remember my brother-in-law telling him. So I mean, that's a whole nother part of the story, you know, down when we get down the road here. But yeah, so we drove up into the canyon, and getting up in there with a horse trailer was pretty sketchy. Anyway, we drove up this canyon and the road dead ends at a horse trail, and we had to cross a couple places where the river had washed out, you know, and Chance's dad doesn't want to know what's it, because we borrowed his horse trailer. we drug the back end of that trailer a couple times, but hopefully his dad won't listen to the podcast. But yeah, it was kind of sketchy getting in there. And then we got to almost where the road ends, and a giant boulder like the size of an SUV like was laying right in the road. So we're probably a quarter mile from the dead end. So we had to like bushwhack the truck and trailer around that boulder the best we could, and like off road a little ways to get, I mean, just even to be able to turn around, we had to go to the end. So it was pretty crazy getting in there. You know, there were little things that were like, man, this trip is not starting out very good at all. So we got to the dead end, and it was about 5 o'clock probably. 4:30, we threw our tent up and camp, like set up our beds and whatnot, because we knew we'd be, you know, past dark when we started going. So we set up camp and then saddled the horses, and we restarted riding at about, I would say, 5:30, something like that. And then just headed up the mountain, had to cross a ravine, I don't mind saying where we were in the Bug Cliffs, is the area we were in, and we were on the south side, and that country is just straight up and down. I mean, it's some gnarly, crazy country. So we would ride the horses up the bottom of the canyon, and in the bottom, it kind of flattens out, I guess. And then there's like a 15-foot ravine where the actual water runs down. So you like come down off the steep cliffy stuff, and it kind of hits the bottom. And then, so you kind of have to navigate your way across the ravine and then So we got going up the canyon quite a ways and decided it's getting late, so let's gain some elevation. And we kind of veered off a little side canyon off the main canyon and started to just zigzag up the hill. And this was only the second trip out with his horses, so they were, you know, pretty fresh, not hadn't been ridden much in the spring. I think it was like Chance refreshed my memory and told me it's been about I think they went two trips and then it was 2 weeks and then we went, so the horses hadn't been ridden very hard at all. We started to push them a little bit, trying to gain elevation. We wanted to get up on top of, you know, one of the canyons, one of the ridge lines, and just glass, set up, you know, the spotting scope and the 15s and start glassing and look for shit. So we started zigzagging and we were not on a trail, period. I mean, we were just bushwhacking it, so to speak, and started zigzagging. And we got to a point where we had to switch back two or three times up this face because, I mean, we had no other option. So the way we were kind of laid out on the trail, my buddy had a pack horse. So him and the pack horse were in front of us, and then my brother-in-law and then I was in the back. So we started switchbacking up this hill, and my buddy had his horse, the horse he was leading, he had the lead rope get caught up in a dead tree. And so he jumped off. And I had the thought, well, maybe we ought to just jump off and walk, because it was only another 200-300 yards up to the top, where we would top, you know, top out and be able to glass. So I had the thought, maybe I ought to jump off here too, and we can just walk them for a little ways, give the horses a break or whatnot. So he untangles that lead rope and jumps, and he just starts leading his horses up. So that was the first kind of thought, like, I need to jump off the horse here. You know, our horse was sweating. I mean, steam coming off of him. We were pushing them. I wouldn't say too hard, but for their condition they were in, it was definitely a little much for them. You know, hindsight, I mean, you see, well, maybe I shouldn't have pushed him so hard. So he switched back one more time and then switched back again as we were just kind of making our way up this like wet, loose dirt face. And on that second switchback, he actually stopped to get back on his horse. And so he stopped, the horse he was leading stopped, my brother-in-law stopped. And when I stopped, I was like on that switchback and facing straight uphill, which was not a good place to be in. So anyway, the horse started to jump, and that's where the rodeo kind of started. So that kind of prefaces where we were at and the situation we were in, and then things just went downhill from there.
Wow. So did everything kind of, I mean, you kind of mentioned, you know, like you're facing uphill, you don't feel like you're in a good spot, but did everything just kind of happen super quick from there and catch you off guard? Or did you kind of know like, hey, this is not a good spot, something might be coming?
It caught me off guard. I was expecting, you know, what my horse did next to happen. Ended up ultimately happening is the horse jumped and kind of tried to go around my brother-in-law's horse. So he's climbing up this, and there was kind of an embankment that was even more steep than the hill we were on that the horse tried to go up and around him. And to preface this, I am not a horseman by any means. I've ridden horses maybe 2-3 times a year, if that. I don't even know if I could saddle my own horse, to be honest. I mean, if I had to, I probably could. but I'm not a horse guy. Luckily Chance, my friend, he's a cowboy. I mean, he knows horses, inside and out. He had us all set up with chaps and everything. And one of the big mistakes that I made, and probably that I'd recommend people, is to not wear, you know, big clunky mountaineering boots on a horse, even if you're just riding for a minute, you know. I had on a pair of Crispy Nevadas, and that was a big mistake, because I think part of the reason why I got stuck in the stirrup was because of those boots. You know, if I would have been in cowboy boots, I think I could have just slipped out really easy. Mm-hmm. When my horse started to jump around his horse, he lost his footing and his knees kind of buckled and he started to kind of grab at the ground. And rather than keep trying to stay on his feet, from what I can remember and what my brother-in-law and Chance tells me, is the horse, he was laying down. So I'm pulling up on the reins and I'm saying, no, his name was Max. I'm saying, no, Max, no, don't lay down. And everything just went crazy from there. So as he's laying down, I felt him start to roll and I tried to swing off of him. So to kind of paint a picture here, the hillside is on my right side. So uphills to my right, downhills to my left. So I swing my left leg up and around the horse as he's rolling. And what happened was he rolled, my right foot got stuck in the stirrup and it just ragdoll through me down the hill. And I remember I remember up to the point where I was flying through the air backwards, Superman. And then it was just lights out. I do remember that feeling of my feet being pulled out from underneath me. And I had kind of an experience at that point where I had like a warmth thought come over me, like I was going to be okay. But that part of the story is kind of hard to explain, but I remember feeling like a warmth, almost like a blanket come over me. And then it was lights out. So what happened is I spun kind of parallel to the ground through the air for about 40, 45 feet down the hill. So, I mean, when that horse flipped me and threw me, I mean, I was moving pretty fast and I spun through the air, you know, like if you grabbed a ragdoll with your hand and just kind of, you know, flicked it across the room, that's the way my brother-in-law and Chance described me going through the air. And I went smack head first, shoulder first into a big giant dead pine that had been burnt of, you know, maybe 10, 15 years earlier. Luckily it didn't have any branches on it, you know, even up about 15 feet, there weren't any branches. It was a big, you know, big dead old pine tree.
Did you make contact with it that high, like 10, 15 feet up and then fell down from there again?
Yeah. Yeah. They, my brother-in-law said it was about 8 to 10 feet up. So I hit the tree and then spun off the tree and then hit the ground. And at that point I was just limp and then slid another 15 feet down. So I think total, they said I probably went about 60 feet from where I flew off the horse to where I, you know, came to a stop. And I was face down in the dirt. And when they said, my brother-in-law said that the sound of me hitting that tree was one of the most eerie sounds he's ever heard. I mean, it was so loud and just, you know, thunk. And then when he saw me go limp and just, you know, hit the ground and just, and it didn't move, he thought that, oh no, he's dead. That's what his initial thought was, just the sound and the way I went into the tree and just being limp. So I just kind of, you know, slid to a stop face first. And my brother-in-law describes it as he was on the horse and he saw the whole thing happen. Meanwhile, when I came to a stop, the horse just rolled past me about 6 or 7 times. So he just end over end rolled down and then came to a stop at the bottom and then stood up and shook his head. And he rolled about 2-3 feet away from me, which thank goodness I didn't like bounce off that tree, you know, differently or whatnot, and then just got rolled over. And I'm actually grateful that my feet didn't get stuck completely in the stirrups. And I think something to do with that, you know, warmth feeling that came over me is I had a little bit of help, you know, some guardian angels that helped me get out of that stirrup is what I think. But you know, my foot didn't get completely stuck in the stirrup. Thank goodness. I mean, it's crazy, this story, how much worse everything could have been. You know, a situation can be worse, but after going through this one, I mean, all the little different things that could have happened and how much worse it could have been, it's pretty crazy. So my brother-in-law sitting there watching this whole thing happen, he says that he was just frozen. Like, what just happened? And then he was like, oh, I got to get off my horse and go, you know. So at that point, he jumped off his horse. Chance jumped off his horse. They had to tie him up right where they were on that steep face, which was kind of sketchy in and of itself. And then they ran down to me. Chance kept running past me down to the horse to make sure that the horse was okay while Matt was checking me out. And luckily that horse had just a, you know, a scratch on his hind quarter. And that was about it. He didn't get hurt at all. Like I said, he rolled to a stop and stood up and shook his head and the horse was fine. And my buddy Chance, he was pretty ticked off of that horse. He yelled and screamed and cuffed and, you know, smacked it around a little bit and pulled him up to the horse, the other horses, and tied him up. And I think I was out for about a minute and a half, like not really coherent. And then my brother-in-law was afraid to touch me. He was afraid to move me, afraid that my neck was broke or back or something. So he just kind of laid there and rubbed my head and was just like, Marty, are you okay? Are you okay? And so finally he said I let out like a death moan. That was just like, oh, you know, just a loud, gurgly moan. And so he knew I was alive. So at that point, he's just like, oh, thank goodness that he's alive, you know. So he just laid there and kind of, you know, got a little bit of dirt. I laid there. He stood there or kneeled there and kind of rubbed the dirt off my face and whatnot. And then on my own power, I rolled over and I knew my shoulder was hurt. But I remember coming to and like looking up at the sky and just, it was just bright, you know, but I remember so vividly the mountainside, the rocks, the trees, where we were. I mean, I have it marked on the GPS exactly, but I could take you right to that tree just based off of that memory right there alone, just waking up and being like, what just happened? And I hurt from head to toe, man. I was in a lot of pain, and I don't do pain very well. I'm not going to say I'm a tough guy by any means. My wife would agree that, you know, my pain tolerance is not very high. So I'm laying there, you know, I'm trying to assess like my injuries, and my brother-in-law said that I just kept repeating myself. And I don't know if I was repeating myself because of the, you know, the concussion, or if I was just like, no, tell me again what just happened, you know, but I kept repeating myself. And my brother-in-law at that point, you know, from the time he got to me to when I started to come to, he had the DeLorme InReach emergency, you know, GPS unit in his hand. And he's just trying to decide, do I hit the button? Do I not? And at that point I was complaining about my ribs hurting and my head, and I kept repeating myself, and they just didn't know the extent of, you know, how bad it was. And so at this point, Chance had ran down the hill to me, and they just kind of talked back and forth, and like, you know, I don't know how bad this is. This is, and at this point, I'm still trying to come to, you know. So they ended up they hit the button and sent. They hit the distress button, and I think, I don't know the exact process on it, if they sent a message to the unit first or if he sent it, but I do know that he said horse accident, one person semi-unconscious, need help, is essentially what he sent back to them. So while I'm laying there, Chance, my buddy, grabs a bottle of water and says, here, drink a little bit of water. And my brother-in-law pulled out a ibuprofen 800 and said, here, take this. And so I took an ibuprofen 800 and we kind of laid there, and I remember telling those guys, like, and kind of tearing up and being like, you guys, whatever happens, you get me off this mountain, and like, get me off this mountain. So I put a lot of, you know, faith and trust into those two to take care of me, and they did an amazing job. They responded pretty good. That's the part that I get a little emotional about, because they took good care of me and made the decisions they needed to keep me safe. So
yeah.
They sent that distress signal, and I think that helicopter was in the air in less than a minute. So they were on their way pretty fast. So
yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's amazing with the in reach, the response time that's possible, but then also a piece that I know I've overlooked in the past is, well, as these, you know, these newer devices where you can actually text, and it's not just like a, hey, there's an SOS, but you can actually say kind of what's happened. Like you mentioned, like he was able to text with them, hey, it's a, you know, horse accident, and you can kind of give some updates on conditions. That's a big deal.
Yeah. Oh, that's huge. That alone, just to be able to help them to know how serious the situation's getting, is it progressing worse or is it getting better? You know, they can relay it then to whoever's on their way out. You know, just that correspondence to back and forth that technology is unbelievable. If guys are going out and doing, you know, these kind of things, like even what happened to the Steve Wolf guy, you know, I mean, it was just a simple visit, you know, just a simple trip into the backwoods. He's been 100 times, you know, and you just don't know what can happen. But to not go with that. And I know a lot of guys, I mean, I have lots of friends, a lot of people who don't do it, who don't have those things, you know? And I just think it's they're being ignorant to the fact that something could happen at any moment. I mean, even if it's a car accident, you know, going through a canyon where you don't have service, you know, I mean, you can use that device in a lot of different situations. So, but yeah, they text my brother-in-law back and forth a couple times. And while the helicopter's on their way, switching back to what we were talking about before, where I'm just laying there on the mountain, at this point it's 6:30, 7 o'clock, and we knew there was no way the helicopter was going to land anywhere close to where we were at, you know. And we didn't know if they were prepared with like a, you know, a basket they could drop down or whatnot. So my buddy Chance, he's a big football player. He was a linebacker, and he's kind of a, you know, a hoorah, you know, be tough, like, let's do this. So he turned and looked at me, and he said, he told me, Marty, you got to get back on that horse, and you got to ride out of here. We got to get to a spot where that helicopter can land. And at that point, I knew I didn't have any lower body injuries, you know, nothing, no ankle, knee, hip. I mean, thank goodness I didn't have any lower body injuries. So he's trying to pump me up like, yeah, you can do it. And I said, all right, let's do it. And so I just told him, I said, at that point we knew my shoulder was messed up. We didn't know what was wrong with it, obviously. But so I just had him take off his flannel shirt because I didn't want to move, you know, any of my clothing that I had on. So he just popped his flannel shirt off and tied a makeshift sling around my arm. And they untied the horses and brought his horse over to me and helped me get on that horse. And I can tell you right now, that was one of the hardest things I've ever done, to get back on that horse after that happened. Not being a horse guy to begin with, you know, I had to get back on that horse and start to ride out. And my knees, and I mean, I was just shaking, trying to hold on to the saddle horn with my right hand, my semi-good right hand, and then my arm is in a sling, and my legs were just shaking. And Chance led me out with a lead rope, and my brother-in-law led the pack horse out. So as soon as we got on the horses, and we maybe rode 500 yards, and all of a sudden we could hear, you know, a faint helicopter in the background approaching. And we're like, wow, that was so fast. We could not believe how fast they got there. I looked on Google Earth, I think last night, just and drew a line from the nearest town that they came from. And it was about, I think it's about 70 something miles. So from the time that they hit the button to they got in the air, it was, I don't know exactly how, but from what we could gather, it was about 20 minutes, 20 to 25 minutes. And they were there. Wow. So from what the helicopter pilots told us, they didn't find us at first. They didn't see us. So they just sat and circled pretty high. And when they would send a text, I think it would ping us again because we were moving, you know? So the rescue center would then send them GPS, and then they'd be able to. So they just sat and circled and just kept, but they didn't see us. And then finally they got low enough and saw us on the horses. And then they just sat and followed us down the ridge and down into the bottom and just sat and circled looking for a place to land. And finally, I think we rode out of there close to a mile, somewhere around a mile, when they could finally land the helicopter. And at that point, you know, I'd had time to like say, okay, you know, my shoulder's messed up, my chest hurts, my ribs hurt, my head. When I first came to, my head is what hurt the worst. And I think it was just because it was from hitting that tree. It was just, you know, bruised and scratched and whatnot. And I was more of a, it wasn't internal. It was more like external, just like a scratch, you know, type pain. But man, I asked him twice, you know, is my head okay? Are you sure? Like, it's not, you know, like busted open or, you know, a gaping wound. Cause man, my head was really bad. That was the most painful part of it. You know, and then obviously when I tried to move my arm or whatnot, so anyway, the helicopter landed. We stopped the horses back a ways, and we unsaddled and started walking towards the helicopter. And they got out and came running up to us, and they said, "Who's hurt?" And you know, I'm raised my hand, and they come over and just assessed me. You know, listened to my heart, looked at me, looked at my head, looked at my shoulder. They're like, "Yeah, your shoulder, something's definitely not right in there for sure." They could, you know, feel it. And they were just like, okay, you know, what do you want to do? You want to ride out of here? And I, at that point, you know, I had made the decision before they even landed, like I'm getting on that helicopter. And the reason why is I was afraid to have to pay for it. That was the main deciding factor of, you know, because at the time we had just purchased that InReach. And so we didn't have any of the, you can buy insurance now, I think, through them. I think they have insurance plans that you can buy for that. We didn't have that at the time. So I'm sitting here like, oh, man, this is going to be a $30,000 bill. Like, you know, I'm sure I could get help to pay for it, whatnot. But I really feel pretty good. You know, I know I don't have a punctured lung or anything like that. So I just told the guys, I said, look, I think I'm just going to ride out of here. And they're like, okay, you know, that's your choice. There were three of them, and they were three of the coolest dudes I've met, man. They were some nice dudes. They knew their way in the backcountry. You could tell. I mean, they had beards and were just, you know, just studs for sure. And they understood the situation I was in, you know, like, I don't want to have to pay for this. And, deep down, I think they were just glad to, you know, be able to fly the helicopter and come out for, you know, a rescue mission, so to speak. And I think they were glad to do that in general.
It'd be interesting to research like what you would be looking at costs, you know, for a guy who's on the fence. And is it $5,000 or is it end up being $30,000? Obviously it's situational, but right. Be a good idea just to have that ballpark idea.
I know you mentioned to us what you ended up paying for this, which was nothing, but I was just surprised when I first talked to you as well that I would assume that as soon as you hit the button and they are coming out, whether you get on or not, I would assume that like there's some sort of charge there, right? Like you, in the end, you didn't take medical treatment. As we'll hear about, you didn't fly back to the hospital, but like
the
helicopter was issued and everything was activated, right?
Yeah. I'm surprised. Yeah. Cause we kept waiting after it had happened for InReach to contact my brother-in-law or something, you know, like an email saying this is your cost for getting the helicopter off the ground, something like that. And those correspondence, those emails, they never came. So and I think my brother-in-law after 2 or 3 months actually reached out to him and told him, you know, what happened. They're like, yeah, you're fine. So I don't know if we just got lucky or if that's really the way that it works. Somebody paid for that, you know, but it wasn't us, and I'm grateful. I'm grateful to know just how fast they'll respond. Because I had heard in the past that in order for a helicopter to get dispatched or, you know, sent to that, someone from search and rescue has to be on the ground first. You know, that's the way with Steve's story is they had to send in somebody on the ground first before the helicopter would come. And he had a, I mean, that his whole story of, you know, helicopters coming was, it seemed like it was kind of a nightmare. But my experience was, okay, you know, search and rescue, this is the situation, we got to go. So they jumped in the helicopter on their way. It was way smooth. And I don't know if maybe that's a Utah thing or if that's just search and rescue in general. I honestly have no idea. But yeah, we didn't pay anything.
Yeah, I definitely know it can be circumstantial in that it can be definitely treated different in different areas. I had done a rim-to-rim hike of the Grand Canyon several years back, and as we were kind of coming out of the canyon and finishing our hike, we could hear a helicopter down below making some sort of flight through the canyon. We just assumed it was some sort of rescue. It was way too low to be like a flying over the canyon tour type thing, and we actually talked to a park ranger at the time. He confirmed it was some sort of rescue call, but he even mentioned that this was actually before the inreaches were as big as they are, and the spots were kind of the big thing, those little spot SOS messengers.
Yeah.
And he said that they've had some serious issues with people triggering those and triggering an SOS when in the end they're just like, they want to ride out of the canyon because they're freaking tired or didn't realize how hard it's going to be to get out. And so I know, like, in that situation, for example, like specifically within the national park, that if there's any sort of SOS or one of those types of calls, like, they treat it, I don't want to say more cautiously, but then I also know that there's definite charges associated with it, at least from what that ranger told. So I could see how it's different in that situation versus your situation where you're, you know, true backcountry, true remote, you've had contact with them to say it's, you know, an actual horse accident. And so not everything's treated the same, which I think is also really helpful and goes back to that two-way communication that you can push SOS, but then you can also specify, yeah, like this is a true emergency.
That's got to be the difference, I think, is the fact that we could text them.
Yeah.
And tell them, you know, that there was an actual accident. Because I think, so we hit the button, and then I believe the, like, this is starting to refresh my memory. The rescue center sent a message to his DeLorme first.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, like, just talking about this just reminded me. So what happened was we sent the SOS, and then the rescue center called the emergency contact, who was my sister, my brother-in-law's wife, my sister, and called her and was like, hey, we just got an SOS distress. Would he have hit this by accident? And she's like, no, I don't think so. Do you know where he is? And they're like, she's like, yeah, he went on a horse ride. You know, she was extremely vague with, and it, you know, I can laugh about it now just because it wasn't serious, but it was at the same point. I mean, it was kind of scary, the fact that she had no idea. So she originally thought we were on the mountain range that we were going to first. And so the rescue center told her where the distress had came from. And they're like, oh, and she didn't say like, oh, that's not where they are. But she was just like, oh, in her mind, she's thinking, I thought they were down, you know, down south. That's strange, you know? And so she hangs up the phone and then calls my parents, our parents, and is like, hey, I just got a call from the rescue center that there's been a distress button that's been pushed with where Matt hit it. And they were like, oh, that's weird. He might have done it by accident, you know? So 10 or 15 minutes goes by. Finally, the rescue center calls her back and said, we've been in communication. Somebody is hurt really bad and we don't know who. And so at that point, she just starts freaking out. You know, is it Matt, my husband? Is it my brother-in-law? Is it the friend? Like, who is it? They didn't know who it was, but they knew that someone was, you know, basically unconscious, had a horse accident, and that search and rescue helicopter life flight was on their way. And so for her, I mean, that was just a nightmare for her, you know, a nightmare come true. And so she's freaking out, not sure what to do. So she calls my parents back, and my dad and my mom, you need to come up here. I don't know what to do. I'm freaking out. So they call, they start driving up to her house because we all live pretty close. And then they called my wife and were pretty vague with her of what happened. And she wasn't quite sure what happened. So she started driving over there too. And in the meantime, we had that thought never crossed our mind that they were going to reach out to our, you know, emergency contact. We had no idea. So Rescue Center starts texting back to Matt, my brother-in-law, and is asking, like, can you give us a name? So he's riding his horse, leading a second horse, and is trying to text on this steep face, like, and the device he has is one of the old ones where you have to, it's like block letters where you have to type one letter at a time, you know, like you push the button and spell the words out, whatnot. So he's trying to ride the horse, lead the horse, and send that message at the same time. And he had at one point coming off the hill before the helicopter landed, but his horse kind of lost his footing and started to slide, and he had to jump off his horse. We were in a bad spot. Looking back, you know, it was probably a spot we probably should have been a little bit smarter about. So he's trying to text her and relay the information. That whole side of it's pretty crazy too.
Wow.
It makes me rethink. I'm trying to think who I put as my emergency contact. I know I did my wife, right? And then I don't know who the second one would have been. I need to go look into that.
Yeah. I mean, just so everybody knows, I mean, if anyone gets anything from this podcast, it's just your emergency contact is going to get notified. So you ought to at least send a name of who's her or whatnot, you know, because they all got together and they're just waiting to hear like what happened. And my dad is extremely emotional, and he was not taking it very well at all. He was assuming the worst. And my wife, she's frustrated because they didn't tell her, you know, that it was me. So when they found out and she was driving over, they didn't confirm with my wife that it was me over phone. They were waiting for her to get there. And then they wanted to know really how bad it was before they told her that it was me. So there was that whole side of it that they were trying to figure out how to break the news that it was me that was on the accident and the error in the accident. And my wife, when she found out, was, I mean, you can just imagine how distraught she was. And
yeah,
so that was, and I mean, I feel horrible about that whole part of it. Just them not knowing, being kind of left in the dark. That part of it's pretty crazy. Pretty sad. Yeah. You know, I do feel bad about that, but
right.
Skipping back to the helicopter, do you know if they had like a basket and were prepared to like rappel down to you, or
they weren't? No, they didn't have. From what I could see, I don't think they had that stuff on there. Mm-hmm. I didn't see like a crane, you know, like a pulley system or anything like that. But I mean, maybe it was tucked up in there. I mean, I didn't look inside. They could have attached it to one of the kids, maybe. But I don't think they were. I don't think they were prepared for that at all. So
yeah,
be good information if you're in that situation to know if did you have to get on the horse and ride out, or could they have hovered above you and got to you? You know,
I don't know. I don't know if they were prepared for that. I'm not sure. And had I not been able to ride out, that would have been who knows? Who knows how much more worse it could have been? You know, and the whole reason why we decided to ride out was because it was getting dark and there was a storm coming, so it was starting to kind of, it was little slushy, I guess, little frozen rain, you know, and almost dark. And we were just not really prepared to be right there. And so that was why Chance was like, we got to ride out of here. I mean, it's getting dark, storm's coming. So that's ultimately why we decided. And we knew that the helicopter couldn't land anywhere close to us too. I mean, they knew that. So.
Wow. So yeah, let's, getting back to the story. And then I do want to kind of recap some of the things you learned, and we mentioned most of them in passing, but just to kind of run through them at the end. But so you turned down, essentially told them, you know, hey, I think I'm good. I think we're just going to ride out of here. They were cool with that. I know they had you sign like a release, right? Which is obvious, but how did things go from there, just to kind of wrap up the story of you getting back to home.
Yeah. So I don't know if I'll get those pilots in trouble if by saying what they did for me, but I signed that form and I was planning on riding the horse out the rest of the, 3 miles out. And they ran back to the helicopter. And then one of the guys came running back over and they said, "Hey, we talked. We're willing to fly you to your truck. Was that your white truck and trailer that's down this canyon a few miles?" I'm like, "Yeah, that's us." And at that point, I was like, you'll fly me down there? And they're like, "Yeah, we'll do that for free. We won't charge you for that." And I was just, man, I was so grateful to not have to ride that horse any longer than I had to. So I'm getting emotional saying, "Yeah, thank you. I would love a ride down the hill the rest of the way to our camp." And so they're like, "Yeah, come with me. And so I walked up to the helicopter. They were starting it. And it took them a minute to get it off the ground. Meanwhile, Chance and my brother-in-law they rode out of there fast. I mean, they were in a full trot with the horses trying to get out. And by the time we lifted up and then landed, they actually beat us to the truck. So they were hauling out of there because they knew they were gonna have to break down what camp we had set up and we were gonna have to drive out of there. So they picked me up and if you've ever ridden a helicopter, it's a smooth ride. I was surprised, they just lifted up and blew up and around and then landed. It was awesome. That was my first time ever being in a helicopter. So, the shed hunter in me, I was still like looking at the hillside. Like, I was coherent enough at that point that I'm like, "Ooh, maybe I could spot a shed from up here. But yeah, they circled up and around and landed and that was it. Shook hands with him, gave the one guy a hug and said, "I appreciate you guys so much and getting here as fast as you did." I remember a couple months later, I sent an email to somebody there hoping that it would get to them and just let them know how grateful I was for them responding as fast as they were and those guys being as knowledgeable as they were. I mean, where they landed that helicopter, it was like a 30-foot by 30-foot flat spot. I mean, any further to the right or left, they're in that little ravine where the creek is, or into some cedar trees. I mean, they landed in the closest spot they could to us. I mean, just set it down on this small little flat spot. It was mind blowing where they landed that thing. I was actually nervous for them when they were coming down. I'm like, "Man, if he goes a little bit more to the right or left, he's going to hit something." But so I was extremely grateful for those guys. And then we jumped in the truck, they unsaddled the horses, and drove out of there. Me and my brother-in-law, we kind of had a moment there at the truck where we embraced and realized like we're safe now and just hugged for about 30 seconds and just realized, "Holy crap, what just happened?" And I'm grateful for him. He's grateful I'm alive, and just kind of had a moment there. And Chance came over. We all just kind of hugged and huddled right there together and, jumped in his truck and drove out of there. And, soon as we hit, he has OnStar in his Chevy truck. And soon as we hit where that could communicate, we got a phone call and it's Chance's brother, who's actually a nurse. And he's like, "Hey, you guys okay? Tell me what's happened. What's going on? Let me know what's going on." And we were just in awe. Like, how does he know? Like, what? And then finally it all started to click and that's our stomachs just fell. We're like, "Oh no,
we're in such big trouble."
Yeah, exactly. Like our wives know, like, "Oh my gosh." So we tell them, basically what happened. And so on the other side, like the family, Whitney, my sister, reached out to Chance's family, which was hard to get a hold of their family because not everybody had everybody's phone number. So that was kind of a chase just getting in touch with his family. And so Chance's brother, the nurse, was like, "Here, let me call them. I'll find out exactly what's going on." So he actually called the rescue center and said, "Hey, this is my background. Like, can you tell me what's going on? It's my brother that's up there." And so they communicated back and forth and realized, and at that point found out that we had turned the helicopter right down. So that gave my family you know, an extreme amount of relief, you know, like, oh, okay. So maybe it's not as bad as what we thought. So, right then we get out of the canyon even further and got to cell phone service, and my sister's calling my brother-in-law, and just, I mean, just let him have it. Like, you could have sent me a text and let us know that everyone was okay. And my brother-in-law was trying to explain. I mean, she was mad. I mean, rightfully so. I mean, she was just worked up from the whole situation being left in the dark, you know. And Matt, my brother-in-law, is trying to explain to her, look, I was riding a horse out trying to text. Like, there was, you know, in that situation, it wasn't like we could just stop and say, hey, you know, this is, we're okay. And to begin with, we didn't even know that you had gotten contact. So we had no idea that you guys even knew. And so anyway, she was able to calm down and we were able to talk, and, you know, that, that part of it is just, I still remember, you know, pulling out of that canyon and getting the phone call, and we were just, we all looked at each other like, how does he know? Like, what? Like, it was such a weird feeling at that point. Like, how yeah. And then when it started to click that everyone knew, it was, oh man, we just all felt so bad. So we all called our wife, and I called my wife, and, you know, had that conversation with her that, you know, it could have been so much worse, and she's just grateful I'm alive. And we made the 3.5 hour drive home, stopped and got some Arby's, and I got home, and my brother-in-law, bless his heart, came in to my house with me at, like, you know, 2:30, 3 a.m. and helped me get undressed, and I showered and got all the dirt off me, and I actually went to bed that night. I didn't even go to the hospital at that point. I was worried about my head. That was what I was most concerned about, but just had a feeling I was going to be okay. Maybe that's just ignorance or whatnot, but I went to sleep and woke up the next morning, happiest I've ever been, most pain I've ever been in my life. And my kids crawling on me, and I'm trying to keep them off of me because I'm in a lot of pain. And, but yeah, man, that was that morning was probably the happiest I've ever been, just knowing I was alive and how bad it could have been. Went and saw a friend of mine who's a doctor, and he advised me that I could just wait to go see him Monday morning and get x-rays, and that's what I did. So it went from being way scary to not too bad. Went in for x-rays, just a pretty busted up collarbone, and that luckily didn't require surgery. Everything healed up good, and I just was focused on being able to draw my bow back for my New Mexico elk hunt that fall. So
yeah,
I would ask the doctor, like, okay, so if I don't have surgery and we go 6 weeks, what's my odds? And they're like, well, surgery is 50-50. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna think positive here. And we got to that 6 week mark and went back in for x-rays, and they're like, it looks good. We're not gonna have to, you might have a slight click when you move it in this motion, but other than that, you're not going to require surgery. So I was like, okay. And that was July. No, that was the end of June. So even if I would have had to have surgery, I would have been able to pull my bow back by September 1st. So.
Wow.
I pulling back 60 pounds, but yeah, it was, so that's the story in another, you know, in a more detailed nutshell, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's good, man. There's so much in there, and I know you sent a, you know, kind of a list of a bunch of things you learned, and as you reflect on it, and we've mentioned a lot of those, obviously starting with make sure you have something like a Garmin in reach or similar, so you can make that call and you can get help no matter where you're at. Obviously first aid stuff comes to mind for sure. One of the things you mentioned in what you learned was to not just, you know, to not get set on being the macho man who won't get off his horse, you know, that it's kind of okay to be cautious and kind of listen to that check, in your gut, even when it makes you sound like you might just be overly cautious, which I think is a really helpful thing for all of us to be reminded of, especially in a group, right? Like guys, we just tend to sometimes ignore the danger or ignore those little signs. And so I think that's a really interesting point to make sure that we all kind of reflect on.
Yeah, absolutely. I think back to the trip before, so the year before, and in my opinion, and I talked to Matt and Chance, some of the spots we got into on that trip were even more sketchy than the trip where I got hurt. So, I mean, and I was like, I had that mindset, like, I don't need to get off the horse, but I'll tell you right now, man, I'm completely changed. I will walk that horse more miles than riding it if I have to feel safe and feel comfortable. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, if you get to a spot where, you know, you have to cross a tree or something, you know, the effort to swing off of your horse and lead it and get back on is a way greater effort than if, you know, something serious happens. So yeah, absolutely. Get off, be cautious, you know, keep that in mind, be cautious.
Wow, man, so much there. How do you, just in general, I'm sure there's so much to this question, and obviously it plays into what you just mentioned, but how do you look at adventures going forward? Because I know this isn't going to stop you, right? But what are some of the big mindset shifts that you have going forward?
Just probably that, just being more mature, being more aware, just knowing that something can happen at any moment. You know, it's podcasts like these and like Steve Wolf's when he was on. I mean, the guy was a sniper in the Army. I mean, that guy was, his podcast is good. That's worth listening to again for sure, because he gives a lot of good tips on, you know, like a emergency kit and all of that, medical kit. But yeah, just being cautious, just knowing your surroundings, making sure you're aware that, you know, something happens here. How can I get out of here? And then making sure you have a good buddy system too. I wouldn't recommend doing extreme, you know, or even, you know, moderate stuff on your own unless you're prepared with the right equipment and with an in-reach or something like that where you can communicate. And definitely buy the insurance so that if you do need Life Flight, you're not letting the financial decision control your, you know, your life threatening situation. Yeah. So you don't have to worry about the finances and that. Mm-hmm. So I do wish that we would have taken pictures, you know, that my brother-in-law or someone had pictures of at least the helicopter or something a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, cause now it's just all in our heads, you know, and it would have been nice to have some pictures. And at that point, you're not thinking, let's take pictures, but I right. think at certain
unless you point, have an 18-year-old with you, they'll be taking pictures.
I know, right? And I'm not saying take pictures just, you know, so you can post on Instagram and show that you were cool or whatnot, but just to be able to remember it and have that experience. So
yeah,
I wish we'd have took pictures and, you know, don't have the attitude that it's not going to ever happen to you, because you spend enough time out in the backcountry, something like that, either you're gonna roll an ankle, something will happen where you're gonna have to leave a hunt early because you're injured or so. I think it's gonna happen, you know, you age and maybe you don't take care of your body as much as you used to, or not enough for the age you're at. Something could happen. I think, you know, you spend enough time out there, it could happen.
Well, that's a wrap, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. And don't forget to go to exomountaingear.com/podcast. Look for the giveaway link and get entered to win a Tight Spot quiver or a Ripcord arrow rest. In the meantime, we will see you next week.